Good morning, Graham. How are you?
Good morning. Yes,
How are
okay.
you? Marvellous. Quite a common thread, I thought, in some of the stuff that came up on this week's agenda of Reform UK and the Constitution. As soon as I read this word, the Jean Monnet piece in the Goliad, I thought immediately of your inveighing in its favour, and then the layers of complexity in which you are extremely well versed. What do you make of what he's saying?
I haven't actually read what he's saying.
Let me
I,
paraphrase
well,
it. Yes.
Georges Monbiot, yeah, I read that. It's very interesting. this is the whole thing that is very good to contrast with America,
As he
their
says.
constitution and our constitution. But
It's the.
it goes back to my often quoted rule about the Ten Commandments. If you don't follow the rules, you don't survive.
It's a sort of law of karma, as it were, isn't it? And the in political writ that eventually it will come back to bite you on the fundament.
Well, it's the end of civilization, basically. I mean, this is what holds civilization together.
Who was it? Was it Gandhi who said civilization in America would be a very good idea?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's quite weak. Our constitution is better than American, I think, being unwritten.
See, that this is what Monbiot is suggesting is part of the problem, in that in being unwritten, it contradicts itself. But I suppose, in therefore, it constitutes a narrative, doesn't it? It's got exceptions that need to be comparatively argued.
No, but this is why the British Constitution is the most flexible in the world,
Yeah, yes.
and therefore you can do what you want to do politically.
See, the examples he gives, sorry to interrupt you, are Boris Johnson's invoking a medieval writ to prorogue Parliament, and Tony Blair claiming some form of droit de séjour in order to not have Parliament vote on going into Iraq.
Well, that's why there are such serious events, that they were misusing the Constitution. But that could have been argued and should have been argued in the court. And it was argued with Johnson's proroguing Parliament.
Which
And
is your point about karma, as it were.
held to be unlawful. Baroness Hale's judgment was superb, as she ought to have been as she was head of the Supreme Court. So that restated the Constitution, and the case against Theresa May is also restated the Constitution. It went through the whole Constitution and said why she was wrong, and the, I
Remind
think.
us of the background there, would you?
Yes, it was Theresa May wanted to simply take us out of the declare Brexit without a parliamentary without an act, in other words, without asking the people.
And Parliament was suspended under her leadership for several days, wasn't it, while this was the rights and wrongs of this were argued.
Yeah, and she went back she appealed it
Yes.
and had to be told again, no, you don't have the legal right to do it unilaterally without Parliament. You have to ask Parliament. But the case itself went back through the Constitution and argued by the Constitution as to why the Constitution says she can't do it, and therefore restated the whole Constitution, and that's why it's so flexible.
So it's basically, it lives, as it were, as each attempted
Exactly.
exceptionalism is raised. That's how it unfurls itself, as it were, in discourse.
Well, this is why the English law is so admired, is that every judgment is a restatement of the law. And in fact, it evolves in every judgment, because every judgment is slightly different, but it takes account of the current thinking and wishes of the people. So you when it comes time, people want, I mean, you can't beat your wife. That was only passed as an act in the 90s, because it became obvious to everyone that you can't beat your wife.
And it becomes a legal matter rather than, as it were, a civil matter, which was always argued previously, wasn't it? Leonie, good morning. Since Graham started debating this morning, the word constitution came up in this Georges Monbiot piece, and Graham is arguing not quite on Monbiot's lines. I think that the English law
French
was
Mondeo, really.
inflexible. Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. It's a bit of an abstract conception, I suppose, but at the same time, there's some of the stories coming up this week, particularly revolve around Reform UK and their unusual activities. For example, Nathan Gill attempting to go to a Eurasian political technology conference in Russia a little while ago and being arrested before he's able to do so. Looking at ways in which a constitution can not only be sort of as it were, modified, but sort of as it can be, so what I'm looking for, disrupted.
I think the most famous aspect of the British Constitution is that we don't actually have one.
This is the irony, isn't it? I think a lot of people find its very opacity a bit befuddling. This seems to be where George is coming from. I mean, is this simply us muddling through, or is it, as Graham argues, as a non-practicing barrister, that what some people might call muddling through is in fact the very act of the law flexing itself?
As Lord Justice Neuberger pointed out, Theresa May doesn't understand English law.
Possibly, possibly because she's not a lawyer.
Go to the back of the class and see me afterwards.
That's the advantage of lawyers, yes.
Well, also possibly the disadvantage of lawyers as well.
Do you find yourself, for example, at assembly level, arguing points of its constitution? And how was that constitution arrived at? Because it was a brand new thing, wasn't it? Not so long ago.
Well, you speak on the morning after the night before of a by-election in Wales,
Indeed, yes. I was
and
waiting for Grimston's third law, but I think he might not be with us this time.
of course the it was originally set up as the Welsh Assembly, and
The Senate.
they changed their name to the Senate. It was
Ah, thank
originally.
you.
And the members of the Welsh Assembly were AMs, the same as members of the London Assembly are AMs,
Not distinguished company.
assembly members, and then set up at the same time as the Scottish Parliament, and the members of that are obviously MSPs. The devolution arrangements for the London Mayor and then the scrutiny body of the London Assembly were different from the Welsh Assembly, and they were different again from the Scottish Parliament. And so one of the big discussions that we've been having, because this is our 27th, sorry, it's the Welsh Assembly's 27th anniversary next May when they have their elections.
Happy dog.
And it's our 25th year this year, so we're doing a series of different things to celebrate 25 years of the London Mayor and the London Assembly. I mean, it's quite astonishing because obviously there was the whole kerfuffle because Thatcher abolished the GLC, which had replaced the LCC. So there's been a whole series of delightfully creating new acronyms all over the place, but 25 years now it's been around. And so the first elections to the for the mayor and the assembly were held in the year 2000. which yeah, 25 years. It's quite incredible.
It's an achievement. It is an achievement. Marta.
And I think the devolution argument, and of course there is a lot in this space going on around what powers should lie where. And I think we think there should be tax raising powers more easily given to the London mayor. For example, one thing that we'd really like to see is a tourist tax, so that people who come to stay in London, and they're probably going to be paying quite large amounts anyway. When I was in Liverpool recently, they have a small tourist tax on people staying in hotels, and I think it's about, a couple of pounds a night or something, and it would hardly raise hotel bills by very much in London to add a couple of quid a night, but it could actually raise quite substantial amounts of money, so that London government has that money coming in, and we've raised that ourselves, and we then spend that on things in London. We don't have that
But the
power
irony is, you
at the
can't, we
moment.
can't, sorry, you can't advocate for these powers except for presumably the Minister for London.
Well, we have to go through government to get additional powers. The way they've done it in Liverpool, obviously they're a much smaller city, that it's a business improvement district. But when it'd be a bit confusing to have, I don't know, I mean, there's multiple business improvement districts.
It's a Pestletine thing, isn't it, from back in the
Yeah, I mean, there's not even one per borough. There's probably about 75 of them. So you can imagine having 75 different levels of tourist tax. I don't think that would quite work. That would be very complicated. So, we'd like to see some more powers. We also think the Assembly could do with some more powers. Our main power is the right to veto the mayor's mayoral budget, which, of course, has never ever been used, because that would be blowing up the mayoralty. And usually, when the mayor is elected from a particular political persuasion, usually the larger number of assembly members will be from the same political persuasion. And the only way you can blow up the budget is with a two-thirds majority. So it would require, for example, at the moment, Labour assembly members to vote against a Labour mayor's budget, and previously Conservative assembly members to vote against a Conservative mayor's budget. So, that's never really been likely to happen. But, we operate differently in the sense that we have the directly elected mayor of London, whereas the Senedd elects itself as a body, and then the largest party within the Senedd chooses its leader, who then becomes the first minister. And that's the same in Scotland, and that's also the same in the National Parliament. So the directly elected mayor arrangement does fundamentally change the relationship with the rest of the elected people on the body, and that has been implemented, as you know. There was a group called the M10, the 10 mayors, but that's now been extended. So there's now more of them all over the place. So the West of England mayor had their first election last May. We've now got a mayor in Lincolnshire. I think that was also the first one in May, and so on and so forth. So they've been there's quite there's one for Cambridge and Peterborough. Yeah, they're all over the place, and they all have different powers again. So it's made it it's a bit of a patchwork quilt, I think it would be fair to say.
Do you think there's a sufficient consistency, or is it simply being, regionally diverse for this to be the case, Graham?
Yeah, it's part of devolution, I think, giving power to the people, local people, which is Labour policy, which they're progressing on, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Prescott was the classic architect of a lot of this, wasn't he? Particularly, I suppose, the one would hope the invigoration of the North. And you think of the power of someone like Andy Burnham and the Labour Party now, or the putative power, but it's not in the end, it seems to be a little bit toothless when in the final analysis. I mean, there are economic powers given to regions, of course, to regenerate, and that can go very well. But there's something missing, isn't there?
Yeah, I think that there should be something in the Constitution to stop extreme right being elected, basically. I mean, dictatorship, they should be against the constitution to elect a dictatorship against democracy.
The thing about one of the ways reformers got around this is the fact that their constitution is that of a private company. And they're actually, according to Byline Times, they're in profit, but technically insolvent. I mean, get your head around that one. It's because of all these donations, basically, that are in the form of loans that could be recalled.
Yeah, I don't know what the tactic is by making it a company. Maybe Leonid knows what political significance that has.
Well, I assume that they must have done it so that they can have less control over what they're doing by the Electoral Commission, because once you're constituted as a political party, you're subject to a number of controls, and the body that is the one that you report to, if you like, about your donations and things like that. And also for individual candidacies within the party when people are contesting elections. So at the moment, there's been this internal election going on for the deputy leadership of the Labour Party result tomorrow. They will have to submit to the Electoral Commission any support they received, financial support they received. There will have to be an account of it submitted. So maybe if you're operating as a private company rather than as a registered political entity, you don't have to do that. I don't know, because I can't say it's something I've looked into. I mean, that sounds like a very serious bending of the rules, if not being downright wrong. I'm surprised that they're able to do that. And then the whole thing about loans, well, I mean, that has been an issue. In Labour with loans being given, and
One of Mandelson's naughty boy scrapes, I think, before he got the former ambassadorship, amongst others.
not just him, but
Not
others as
just him.
well. And you can argue that the principle of loans and not ownership and finding someone else to put the money up is effectively, the whole PP public-private partnership thing. He thinks it as well.
Well, that's it. Yeah, not perhaps one of the crowning achievements of the Blair era, as it's turned out. Seemed like a good idea at the time, but it's to say, effectively, it runs deep, doesn't it? As you say, you're alluding, I guess, to the dynamic between private industry and enterprise, and the politics, which is typically achieved through donation, isn't it?
Well, it
But
sounds
also
as if
through
they,
other elements in kind, shall we say.
yeah, it sounds as if they should be, it should be taken to law to see whether it's illegal, because it's, I mean, the funding of political parties is fundamental to the whole system.
There is a small levy,
So
isn't there, that makes up aspects of shortfall, but yeah.
if the reform is getting around it by being able to spend any amount of money it likes. That surely has to be against the law.
And the irony would be, I suppose, if it overspends, which appears to have been the case recently, but because the cost of campaigning has gone up so much, perhaps through, shall we say, the elements of AI and so forth, that its Welsh rep was going to argue for in Russia, which seems also to be linked to Bitcoin, incidentally, but that's a whole other story. Wheels within wheels here.
Well, that's
If
very good.
we have to bail out a private company effectively, which of course people's beef with the water companies, isn't it, for example?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see that reform are going to be able to continue with that. I would have thought that, as Graham says, if that is how they're approaching it, then that is a fairly significant bending of the rules, because some of the controls are also about what political parties can spend during an election period as well. We actually have controls over that. So if you're a private company, I suppose you could argue that the controls don't apply to you, which is obviously ridiculous if you're standing candidates. Someone needs to sort that out.
People have often said recently that Keir Starmer is by default holding the door open for reform, by appealing to its base. And last time around, Mal was saying that he feels that reforms policies are effectively, in quotes, socialist policies rewritten with a sort of a pint of Worthingtonian and a cloth cap and a car code for Raj style.
I don't, no, I don't think that's true. I mean, there might be one or two policies that have emerged that I think that they're sort of seeking to flap at people in various places to distract them. But the basic set of policies of reform are not socialist. No, I don't
I
think
wouldn't
so.
have thought so. I mean, I'm sure Mal's argument is a sound one, but it's sound in particular with a particular calibration.
Yeah, I think you have to cherry pick what you're looking at. I mean, one of the main things that Farage has talked about a lot, and he has spent a lot of time in the States, is an insurance system coming in for the National Health Service. So that fundamentally changed something that has long been very much a Labour, initiative.
We've had the HSA for quite a while now, but since the 30s, I think, but that's a marginal thing.
Carried through, and we are all very we like the NHS in this country because you don't have to pay to use it.
I
It's
recently had when I was beaten up the other week, I had really top draw service, as I say. It took 7.5 hours, but
oh
people
my God.
really went the extra mile of bringing me cups of tea and goodness knows what, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, well, that's good. That's what we like to hear. Whereas Farage is very clearly talking about an insurance system, so you would pay for the service, which is very different.
I think that's the one, the misinformation is that all these systems are breaking down. Everything's broken in Britain. It's an exaggeration, extreme exaggeration,
Or managed
because people have
decline, which
got.
is, of course, where often private industry can say come in like the proverbial white charger.
Yeah, that's what it's aimed at. But it's in the constitutional sense, it's against corporatism.
And I suppose, in a sense, if you it's arguing that the constitution itself is broken, or which is subtly different, fragmented. This may not be the case, and
The
you're saying
constitution is
that
not broken at
continually.
all.
Re No, indeed. The implication is, if you have something called Broken Britain, which I think was a Cameron trope, wasn't it? That effectively that sense of common understanding which underpins its running repair is in disrepair.
Well, that's why it's populists. That's what populists do. They just give misinformation.
That's a lot of it about, isn't there?
I think the Broken Britain trope, and the whole let's go back to the good old days is very much about returning to the 1950s, when it probably was fine to beat your wife. Coming back to that point.
So the 1850s, possibly, but
And when still we found in the 1950s an awful lot of the, if you looked at the globe, an awful lot of it was pink, representing the British Empire and this sort of thing. And it's that sort of mindset that there is any possibility that we could somehow return to, the halcyon days of the past. Well, of course, the 1950s were not halcyon days for, multiple numbers of people.
Rationing was still a thing till about 1960, wasn't it, for example? Everything was
Rationing,
exported.
well, rationing was still a thing, actually, maybe proven now to be quite a good thing because
Nutritionally.
nutritionally, yes, it seems to be quite a good thing not to eat too much and actually possibly to undereat on a regular basis. But anyway, that's a whole different topic of conversation. But it wasn't very good for women. They were mostly confined to, they'd all been shoved back into the home after having been, involved in the war effort in the 1940s. Black people who came here to help with reconstruction and rebuilding of the 1950s were treated appallingly. I mean, the 1950s were nice for some people, perhaps who looked like Nigel Farage, but not terribly nice for lots of other people. I think the real problem that we have at the moment is a lot of people are still really feeling the pinch, really feeling what is called by politicians the cost of living crisis. But most of us would, we go in the shops and food is phenomenally expensive, especially the things that, ordinary food that most of us want to eat, need to eat. It's just ferocious. Gas and electricity bills have gone up.
They're about to go up again. So, in a sense, this challenges our sense of of consensus, doesn't it?
Well, it challenges our, ability to, as well as working hard, feeling that our
Yeah,
the
and
money
playing
that,
by the rules is that the other trope? Yes.
yeah, that, the amount of money that comes in, we like it. Obviously, we need to spend it on day-to-day things, but we do like occasional treats, like going on holiday or things like
Chewing a
that.
bit of carpet, yes, as Mrs. Trellis enjoys with the do.
It's really tricky at the moment for loads of us. We're really financially struggling, and I think when people start to financially struggle, that is when you end up with these situations where, people start looking around for simplistic solutions and unscrupulous politicians. And I think Farage is completely unscrupulous. All this pretense at being a person of the people, and he went to, posh schools and has always had an income of £1 million and all this sort of thing. But, people think, oh, he's a nice bloke to have a pint with down the pub. Well, he's not, that's it's all a facade. But, he's very, very good at it. He's a brilliant politician. I don't agree with anything he says, but he is a very, very clever politician. And, people turn to politicians like him for simplistic solutions when times are tough.
The word in my head is accountability, Graham, with someone like Farage. I mean, there are already more than whisperings about some financial irregularities in his own practice at whatever he does from week to week. Is there enough in place? I'm also thinking of Boris Johnson, the COVID inquiry this week, saying, handing over the, as it were, his paperwork and saying, look, you try and figure this one out to the people questioning him.
Well,
Is there enough? Is there enough of the buck stopping early enough in terms of the way that the Constitution is laid out? I mean, you were
I was
saying,
going to say that it's all in the Constitution as
yeah,
to what you can and can't do in certain situations.
but
And perhaps.
situations we talked about earlier on unfurl themselves, and then the inconsistencies and worse sort of came through karma-like after the fact, as is happening, for example, with the COVID inquiry this week.
Well, that's the disadvantage of applying the law. You have to do it after the fact. So, but the point is, you have to enforce it. If you don't enforce it, then you lose it. And this is what is happening. The government aren't enforcing the constitutional law, or a lot of other laws.
So early,
People get
there is a
away
case
with.
for early intervention by simply by doing that. Say you can't do this particular way. It's unconstitutional.
Well, that's how you survive as a people.
Yeah.
You apply your constitution. That's the way it's supposed to work. It's the rules by which you live.
Yeah, but you're
But if
saying
you
this
don't
current
apply
government is not doing that.
it,
And ironically enough, headed up by the former Director of Public Prosecutions.
Exactly. This is why it should take my case should go back to court.
Yes, indeed, the Tideway Tunnel.
Yeah,
It
because it
should
was
be. It
again.
should leave road east have been heard, shouldn't it? Because the ruddy thing's been built now.
Exactly, yeah. But that's why I've issued a notice, not a legal notice, to say that it should be. I've offered it to the Serious Fraud Office to reopen,
Yeah.
because it's a fraud against the country of in the order of the black hole. 20 billion or 50 billion.
And
It's
presumably, what will have to
massive.
happen is some, and there are plenty to choose from these days, aren't there? Some analogous or reasonably analogous case to provide a precedent for reverting to the state of the law before your prosecution was your case was forestalled.
Well, it's a
Yeah.
criminal act to defraud the government.
Right. And again, the COVID inquiry, I suppose, might provide one such test case or the conclusions of it. Leon, I won't ask you to talk about Keir Starmer ad hominem, but do you think that things at the top, generally speaking, over the last few administrations have been, legally tight enough?
I was just thinking about what you were saying about Farage and the way he operates. And I do think it's not so much about there is also a responsibility here from the media as to where they apply the oxygen of publicity. I
Very
mean,
much so, very
there's
much
been
so.
an awful lot of
Yes.
coverage of Prince Andrew and his mansion in Windsor Great Park. I'm not quite sure who on earth else could live in
With a
the
tunnel
Royal.
to Woking Picture Express or something, isn't it?
Well, I mean, who could live in the Royal Lodge in the middle of Windsor Great Park if it wasn't someone, however faintly now he's associated with the royal family, he is still a member of it, in terms of his birth, which is why it will be hard to stop him being called Prince Andrew, even if he loses all his other titles. But
The
there's
artist
been an
formerly known
awful
as.
huge amounts of publicity over that, and looking at the title deeds and all the rest of it, huge amounts of publicity over Keir Starmer accepting a coat or tickets to go and see Taylor Swift or whatever it was,
Yeah, no kind of a taste, isn't it?
and huge amounts of publicity over Angela Rayner, and there were obviously people who were investigating her continuously, whatever she did, her house in Ashton-under-Lyme and then her flat in Hove. But where is all the publicity going on about Nigel Farage's house in Clacton, which he has now claimed that his wife bought? Where did she get £850,000? And there's been no
Well, just left it
investigation.
under on top of the fridge, didn't he? Presumably,
Yes, but exactly. But where did the money come from?
Yes,
You know, what does she do that brings in that amount of money? Is she a non-dom? I can't remember. I think she's definitely from somewhere in Europe, actually, which is
This.
quite ironic. But the amount of publicity about, his dodgy financial dealings, that I think also led to less stamp duty being paid, and less
I think you're quite right. Fixed, yes. Yeah, same
and I
law,
think
William.
actually I think that's the important thing here, is that the media also at the moment seems to be giving reform a bit of a free pass on so many of these things, and only investigating things occasionally. Obviously, there have been a bit of investigation into this Nathan Gill person, which I don't quite understand, even though I don't think the investigations have finished yet.
I think you're quite right. It dates back to 2021, and for one thing, so it's a little bit opaque from that point of view. But it appears to relate to him having an interest in Bitcoin and in alternative fundraising that has some sort of a Russian connection. In other words, some of the expertise he was drawing on has also been made use of by Alternative for Deutschland, the Popular Force Party in Italy, and various others of their ilk.
But there seems to
An
be
international
a lot
movement.
more attention paid to the recent connections between Prince Andrew and Chinese people than there have been to Nathan Gill and what he was up to. I mean, again, I think reform getting a free pass.
It's
Attending
so.
a forum of how to undermine the West.
Is that in
Exactly.
itself a cost? I mean, I suppose you could argue that Gill's detainment in 2021 by the police at Manchester Airport was on a potential constitutional crime. Ironically enough, I think I remember I was on the bus a couple of news review days ago and weeks ago, and two of the guys on the Bromley one-way system were arguing for Ben Habib, the former prominent reform member, and his own advance party, which wants to start arresting people for treason. Presumably, his former colleagues would be the start of it. And they were sort of saying, hang him high, but perhaps suggesting there is something rotted in the state of reform land.
Well, the unlawful parties seem to be getting hold of the constitution rather than the lawful parties.
It's the weasel factor here, the fact that Farage presents as a maverick and I might almost say sort of Walter Mitty in parliamentary in terms. He doesn't always shine there, or doesn't always have the opportunity to. But also he's doing politics in a way, as Trump is, that is effectively disruptive. And there's a certain, perhaps a certain vicarious appeal to this.
Yeah, that's the method, is to lie. I mean, lying again
To
used to be
put it more
against the law. I
succinctly.
mean, Perfumer had to resign because he told one lie, but if you tell lies all the time, apparently it's okay. I
So,
mean, it's a fundamental. It's the breaching of the social contract, basically, when you lie intentionally.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, Graham. I suppose that please correct me if I'm wrong here. The expectation here is that if this carries on, the enough rope principle will mean that eventually a dodgily conceived enterprise will come a cropper. And already we've seen mass resignations in reform councils this week and previous weeks, and sort of dust-ups between people who can't agree on some fairly basic points of principle. And as Mal said the other week, once they're actually in the political waters, don't really know how to swim without a float.
Yeah, well, that's what I reckon. That's what we said last week, is that just let them get elected and show what a mess they make of everything. And then they will get unelected by the time for the general election.
But then, so is this to take Leone's point about excessive media coverage, with which I entirely concur, is this the only way to counter that, or is there something to do with the way in which the Fourth Estate operates and editorial balance that needs to be addressed as well?
Yeah, but it depends what you're bringing into the press. I mean, how unlawful they are is what they should be talking about, not how successful they are.
Which would imply that there needs to be a certain, how could I put it, intelligible advocacy for the importance of law in terms of public
Well, of
education.
course, I mean, Brexit should have gone to law because the politicians couldn't sort it out, so it should have gone to law.
It's the sort of thing that something like AJP Taylor would have talked about and sort of extemporaneously back in the day. We don't really have people like that anymore, do we? And
No,
now over
no.
to our legal correspondent, Joshua Rosenberg, or whoever it was back in the day. These people are not making as much noise is the wrong word, is exactly the wrong word, but as much a much sort of generally available eloquence.
Well, that's a part of the tactic,
Except
isn't it?
you.
Not to give people a voice who are telling the truth.
This is a profound point, and one to ponder and return to. I wonder if we could talk now about policing. And this is on the back of something you said last time, Leone, but also a report in this week's excellent Southwest Londoner, compiled by some very promising young journalism students, it must be said. So Mitcham Front Counter is closing soon. The only one left, apart from Charing Cross, will be Lewisham, where not too long ago I passed Lewisham Police Station and found police tape around the police station, which is
No,
there's a
that's
that's
not
a
no, that's not quite right. That's not quite right. So
Oh,
back
please
in
correct me.
yeah, so back in July, the police came up with very suddenly, without any consultation with anybody,
Mortal.
and it was very much from the police. It wasn't something that came from the mayor, but they suddenly announced that they were going to completely close swathes and swathes and swathes of police stations across London to the public. They weren't actually going to close the buildings. They weren't going to take the staff out, but the public would no longer be able to come in and report a crime over the front counter. So, which is why people talk about front counters as a sort of shorthand for meaning public access to police stations. They were going to keep 19 across the capital that would be opened 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Well, 19, it would mean that, for example, there would be nothing in the whole of Merton and the whole of Wandsworth, which I represent. So if you wanted to report, you'd either have to go to Brixton or you'd have to go to Kingston. Those were the two sort of nearest ones.
And if you're in a bit of a state, getting on the night bus in said state, it's not an easy
Yeah,
thing, yeah.
so completely impractical. So there was a lot of lobbying after this first announcement by assembly members, MPs, councils, council leaders, councillors, and a lot of people set up petitions and lobbied us, and also lobbied the police direct. And then what's just come out is an updated version of their plan, which they originally announced it because they said it needed to save £7 million. The revised plan, they say, still saves £7 million. But what they're doing is they're keeping more of the front counters open. So, for example, Lavender Hill in Wandsworth was going to be completely closed to the public. It is now going to be kept open, but not 24/7. So it's gone from currently 24/7, then it was slated for complete closure. And now the plan with Lavender Hill, as an example, is that it will be open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Friday, and it will also be open at weekends from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. So, and the reason why they're saying that this will be better is why they're saying that they don't need the access 24/7 is because almost nobody goes in anymore at night to report crimes. Keeping Charing Cross open is in the centre of town, so I guess that makes sense. Although obviously recent revelations about goings on at Charing Cross and the behaviour of officers there have been hideous
Indeed, indeed.
with the Panorama, undercover investigation. Why they want to keep the Lewisham one open, I don't know, because that's not very central.
It's, I
But
have
those.
memories of living in Capital, which colleagues told me it's still the case that the mellifluous sound of a police siren is to be heard all day, every day, 7 days a week, up and down Catford Broadway.
So they're keeping those two. Those will be the only two that will be 24/7. So by reducing the number of stations kept open 24/7 to those two, they're now keeping more stations open, but on this, they're still fairly extensive hours, 10 in the morning till 10 at night, and then 9 in the morning till 7 at night at the weekend.
It's some
So
belief, certainly. Yeah,
yeah, so I'm very
well,
pleased that.
Saturday night surely is when most
Yeah.
petty
Well, a
crimes.
random example. I'm just me, but I was attacked at 8:20 on a Sunday evening, quite randomly. And I think sometimes these things in general can happen when you least expect it.
But did you go to the police station
I
afterwards to
didn't.
report?
I was. I had to. I decided to go and do the show because I still have some teeth left. But I've since had. The BTP has to obtain the footage, so that's now happened, and we'll take it from there. So I suppose it's really due process. But if something, if I had been robbed, for example, and which luckily wasn't the case, or a child had been injured, then it's a different set of criteria come into play, don't they?
So the reason why they're saying that the front counters are no longer needed is because 95% of crimes are no longer reported at the front counter. People ring 999. The introduction of 101, the non-emergency number where you can ring up and report a crime, and also reports over the internet, because people report via email as well, and you fill out a form online. 95% of all crimes are now being reported to the police via other means. People are not going to police stations anywhere near as much as they used to. So that 5%, though, represents 50,000 crime reports by people who, haven't got smartphones, can't get online. Digitally excluded, as the expression goes. So, if you're going to keep the police stations open to help deal with that, you would have thought you'd map where there's more digital exclusion. But I don't think they've done that
That's
either.
such a profound point, isn't it? As I say, that you so often for gov.uk procedures, you're deemed to have a smartphone these days. You might
Yeah,
not.
you are. You are. I mean, it's almost impossible to claim benefits, pay tax, because you have to fill out the form online now. There's no paper forms
And
anymore.
crime so often affects marginalised people. I mean,
Yeah.
without wishing to stereotype them, people in, shall we say, alternative lines of commerce that are not quite legal may well use phones as a sort of currency. But that's just an aspect of modern crime, isn't it?
So we need to hope that they are going to do something to have perhaps have a co-located hub, for example, in Mitcham, Perhaps with the local authority and the
And presumably
police.
your arguing for this quite volubly.
Yes, I've been
Yeah.
arguing quite strongly in favour of, we need to have something in Merton. It's just ridiculous. People in Merton need some sort of ability to access the police, co-locate it with the fire brigade, the local authority, whatever. I don't mind, but it's unfair to expect people in Merton to have to go all the way to Kingston or to travel miles to get up to Brixton, which is nowhere near Merton.
Yeah, Graham. What's the constitutional line on the ability to access police services? And do you think the sort of solutions that are being proposed are adequate?
Well, access to justice,
Well, effectively, it's the first line, isn't it? Yeah.
And there's enormous debate over access to justice continually, and it's part of many arguments in court. Is the right to access to justice, and all the phrases like justice must be seen to be done, not only done but seen to be done. So there must be a place that you can see that you can go and report a crime to, presumably. So, yeah, it's a very fundamental point, and I would have thought is central to controlling the streets, basically. I mean, they're retreating from the streets, aren't they?
The optics of policing is
No,
the
no,
only,
no.
sorry.
No, that's completely the opposite.
People may
That's
think that, but
no.
please develop that, Leona.
No, they're not. I mean, one of the reasons why they're saying, well, we'd rather lose some dogs from the dog units, lose some horses from the horse units, and we would also rather not have people tied down in police stations waiting for reports of crime that don't come in because people are ringing 101 and reporting it that way. They're saying that they'd rather shut the front counters so that they can get the staff back onto the streets. Now, the problem with visible policing on the streets at the moment is that there's also this whole set of abstractions going on continuously from all the neighbourhood teams around London, who are unable to spend more time doing those duties because the constant demonstrations each weekend. So the police have had to sort of remake the whole way that they run themselves
Well, people
so
might
that.
say the reason those are happening is also of constitutional concern. But sorry, yeah.
But every week has put a huge burden on the police in London, which Londoners pay for, even though these are national demonstrations. So it's a huge burden on the police, and I can see why the Home Secretary is saying we don't want endless repeat demonstrations, because the pressure on the police has just been intolerable. I mean, quite a lot of the police have really overworked and have
Which
now
might
gone.
lead to poor behaviour, I suppose. You could argue.
No,
Yeah.
it's led to them going off sick because
You're right. Yeah.
they're stressed. So we've got, and then of course, if you've got high levels of sickness absence on top of abstraction of your staff from the local areas into the centre of London at weekends, and then they become stressed and more of them go off sick, etc., etc., it becomes a death spiral. So we're not in a good place at the moment.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you have to demonstrate that you're responding to what people are demonstrating about, and then there'll be less demonstrations. I mean, the reason they repeatedly demonstrate is because there's no response.
well, the idea that going onto the street of London is going to have an impact on what is going on between Gaza and Israel is fanciful. The only thing
Well, I
that.
wonder, I wonder. Thinking
Oh,
about the
well, that's
demonstrations in
very
Israel itself, Leonie, they
I'm
seem to have
sorry.
had some sort of an impact. But yeah.
No, I think they've had no impact. The one thing that has
What,
had
the
an impact.
worldwide protests, you think have had no effect?
Well,
No
we
effect
are dealing
at
with
all, sir.
psychopaths, so some people
Sorry,
might argue.
who is arming Israel?
Quite a lot of people.
No, mate, it's the Americans. It's Donald
Yes.
Trump. It is Donald Trump who has been supporting Netanyahu and has been continuing to arm Israel. What has made the big change and created the recent ceasefire when Netanyahu, who may or may not be a psychopath, I've not seen the diagnosis, decided to attack Hamas leadership in Qatar? And that is what changed Trump's mind, because he's quite chummy with the Qataris. That is what has changed in this equation. It's got nothing to do with people being on the streets anyway. Do you think Donald Trump takes any notice of anybody? He doesn't even take notice of the courts in America telling
Well,
him that he can't do things.
I
He's
suppose the aspect of this would be the ICE presence that's been reneged from San Francisco, but is also a pretext for clamping down on protest as a way of moulding the way society interacts with government.
He's been shoving people out of America using ICE to do it. He's been bringing the National Guard onto the streets, and
On valid fascist pretext, right
it's
after.
basically a fascist dictatorship going on in America, with the Congress and the Senate have been, their role where they make decisions has been removed. He's completely, ignoring what the courts have said about many of these actions that he's been doing. I mean, he is a complete autocrat. You think he's taking, oh my goodness, look, there's all those thousands of people on the streets of London or Paris or somewhere. Oh yes, I must listen to them. No, he would say, woke lefty rabble. Come on, give me a break. This is the only reason things have changed is because the Israelis bombed Qatar. That is
That's
what's changed.
well. I think you're entirely right. But also, there's the element of the instrumentalization of public opinion, isn't there? And how that can be politically expedient. And at the moment, the moves to perhaps marginalize or certain elements of it.
I think there's the misconception on the way public protest works. The protesters are talking to
I
themselves.
think Leo is
They're building
arguing
up.
specifically about current events rather than previous ones.
Protesters are talking to themselves.
And
Well,
indeed, and Mr. Struthers is hoisting a placard, which I do take notice of.
yeah, but by talking to themselves, they're building up a bigger and bigger protests throughout the world.
I'm delighted to hear that people are talking to themselves, but in the old joke, the first sign of madness is hairs on the palm of your hand. The second sign of madness is looking for the hairs. The third sign of madness is talking to yourself.
It's when you get
Well,
leadership that
that's
seems
not
to function on
exactly
that
talking to
basis, isn't
yourself.
it? Yeah.
Themselves, I was saying.
Yeah.
The protests, they're all organizing, and they're organizing internationally now. I mean, up to the United Nations. So now the United Nations
It is a question of
is
optics, isn't it? I
behind the
mean,
protesters.
I suppose one of the
All
factors
of
is.
that might be true, but I still think it hasn't made the difference of achieving the recent ceasefire or any of the previous ceasefires. I think the only thing that really makes a difference in Israel, and the only thing that makes it, and has always been the case, Israel has been armed and endlessly supported by the United States of America. And that has actually been true, whoever has been in the White House. And the only thing that really makes a difference is what America does. And that's why, at least one set of the attempts to broker a better relationship between Israel and its neighbors is called the Camp David Accords. I mean, it's always the Americans have been there, and the Americans are the ones who are the most guilty in terms of supporting the incredible activities that have been perpetrated by the Likud-led government. Unbelievable.
And of course, they've been appearing on rotation this entire week, haven't they, in the Knesset and its sort of hinterlands? Well, who knows? Again, it's such a smoking gun out there, isn't it? The optics that are currently being presented seem to be at variance with some of the statistics that are available in terms of how people are coping from day to day. But let's wish them well, I guess.
Well, it depends whether the Americans can actually enforce their constitution. This is what the Democrats seem unable to do.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the agreement as it is seems to have more holes than of Swiss cheese. There's lots of suggestion somebody made on Al Jazeera last night that Israel is arming internecine militias in order to perpetuate conflict within the zone before the policing can get started, such as it is.
Well, that's what they've always done.
Yeah, divide and rule and all that. Anyway, on that, I would say optimistic note, but realistic note. Thank you both very much, and have a peaceful weekend.
And you
Thank
guys.
you.
Thanks. Bye.
Ciao.